Imagine looking at this live, wall-sized digital map of the entire country. But instead of seeing highways or, mountain ranges or city borders, all you see is just movement.
Right, just a massive web of activity.
Exactly. You're looking at millions of these tiny glowing dots, and they're constantly buzzing along these invisible overlapping arteries 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
It never really stops.
Yeah, that's the reality of the global freight network. It is this incredibly beautiful but also highly chaotic continuous dance of goods moving from ports to warehouses right to your front door.
Yeah.
But here's the multi-billion dollar question for you today. What actually happens behind the scenes when a massive portion of the human beings coordinating that dance suddenly decide to hit pause?
Well, it creates a scenario that frankly terrifies logistics executives. I mean, the entire global supply chain is fundamentally built on this assumption of continuous, uninterrupted motion.
Right.
So when that motion abruptly stops, the underlying physics of the supply chain, they don't just slow down, they break apart incredibly fast.
Welcome to the deep dive. We know you are tuning in because you want to understand the hidden mechanics of the world around you. And today we are, well, we're tearing apart something that is completely invisible to the average person, at least until the moment it fails.
Yeah, which is when everyone notices.
Exactly. We are exploring this fascinating operational manual. It's titled Strike Contingency Planning for Trucking Companies. And it was published by RSS Inc.
Right. They're a highly specialized staffing and logistics agency.
Yeah. And our mission today is to explore this invisible, high-stakes machinery of supply chain resilience. We're going to examine the exact strategies these companies use to build what is essentially a fully functional shadow operation.
And this document, it isn't some theoretical white paper, you know. It is a highly tactical survival manual.
Yeah, totally.
It outlines the exact minute-by-minute architecture of what happens when a logistics company has to keep the world's freight moving while their core human workforce is disrupted by a labor dispute.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we get into the actual solution, we really have to understand the anatomy of the threat itself.
Okay.
Why is a localized labor issue such a systemic, catastrophic nightmare for a trucking company?
It really comes down to the extreme fragility of that continuous movement model we just mentioned.
Right.
The modern transportation network, it isn't just a fleet of independent trucks roaming around picking up boxes. It's this deeply integrated, highly sensitive ecosystem.
Yeah, there are so many moving parts.
Exactly. I mean, you have the drivers, obviously, but behind them, you have dispatchers routing their every move. You've got maintenance technicians actively keeping the equipment street legal.
Right, checking the brakes and tires.
Right. And terminal workers orchestrating the loading and unloading of the freight, plus all the administrative staff managing the data flow.
You know, the way I see it, think of it less like a fleet of vehicles and more like this massive, highly pressurized clockwork mechanism, or maybe even like a giant Jenga tower.
Oh, a Jenga tower is a great analogy.
Right. Because if you pull out just one specific piece, like, say, the terminal workers at a single regional hub.
Yeah.
You don't just isolate that piece and lose that one hub.
Yeah.
The whole tower wobbles. It's like introducing a pocket of air into a hydraulic system.
Yeah, the pressure drops everywhere.
Exactly. The hydraulic arms, which are the trucks themselves, they physically lock up across the entire country because the fluid, the freight, literally has nowhere to flow.
That is the exact mechanism of the failure. That localized friction immediately causes a systemic cascade. Let's trace that drop in pressure for a second.
Okay, let's trace it.
If your terminal workers stop, your drivers literally cannot unload their trailers.
Wow, yeah.
And if the drivers can't unload, your fleet utilization rate, which is basically just the percentage of your really expensive fleet that is actually out there moving and making money.
Versus just gathering dust in a lot.
Right, that rate plummets to near zero. The physical trucks are just sitting idle in a yard. And when trucks sit, incoming freight immediately begins to accumulate at the distribution centers.
It just piles up.
Within a matter of hours, warehouse throughput slows down, and eventually the entire facility grinds to a complete halt because there is physically no square footage left to put the incoming pallets.
And man, the financial bleed of that paralysis is just staggering.
You know, it's brutal.
The RSS Inc. manual points out that even when an 80,000-pound rig is sitting completely dead in a parking lot, it's still actively burning cash.
Right.
I mean, the company is on the hook for massive monthly equipment leases. They're paying commercial insurance premiums. They're eating the daily depreciation of the asset.
Outgoing cash flow is ruthless. You know, it really doesn't care that your revenue generating movement has vanished.
Not at all.
But the bleed goes way beyond just fixed costs. The company is now being hit with severe service penalties for missing their contractual delivery obligations.
Ouch.
Yeah. And if they miss too many of those delivery windows, they aren't just losing money today. They risk having their long-term contracts completely terminated by the client.
And out in the real world, you know, manufacturers, retailers, and distributors, they are entirely reliant on that predictable freight capacity.
Yes, absolutely.
Because nobody holds massive amounts of backstock inventory anymore.
Right. Modern commerce runs almost entirely on just-in-time manufacturing and stocking.
Yeah, so there's no buffer.
Exactly. A factory making car parts might only have enough raw materials on hand for the next 48 hours of production.
Wow.
So within days of a trucking network becoming unstable, the cascade hits the consumer. You start seeing immediate production line shutdowns at manufacturing plants and massive inventory shortages on retail store shelves nationwide.
So knowing that a single localized strike can trigger a national economic freeze, a company obviously cannot wait until the picket lines actually form to figure out their game plan.
No, that's way too late.
The source material really emphasizes that surviving this requires a proactive structural response. You essentially need an operational lifeboat, completely pre-built and ready to deploy at a moment's notice.
What's fascinating here is that the most successful, resilient logistics companies, they do not treat strike readiness as a panic mode reaction.
Really?
Yeah, they don't view it as an anomaly. They treat it as a completely normal mathematical facet of their overall operational resilience.
Huh.
It is just another risk factor that has to be structurally managed long before it ever materializes.
And that operational lifeboat, it has an incredibly rigid command structure.
Yes, it does.
The RSS manual outlines 5 distinct leadership roles that must be explicitly defined and trained well in advance of any disruption. Because when chaos hits, you cannot be sitting in the conference room arguing over who has the authority to reroute 1,000 trucks.
Exactly. You need immediate clarity. You have the crisis response lead, who acts as the ultimate decision maker for the entire shadow operation.
Okay.
Beneath them is the operations manager, whose sole focus is the actual physical movement of the freight and adjusting the routes.
Makes sense.
Then you have the workforce coordinator, actively managing the influx of alternative staffing. The customer communication lead controls all external messaging to the clients.
Crucial role there.
And then crucially, you have the safety compliance lead, providing dedicated, unwavering regulatory oversight.
That separation of powers is actually a really clever corporate survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
You are intentionally creating friction between the operations manager and the safety compliance lead.
Yes, by design.
Right, because the operations manager's entire incentive structure during a crisis is to move the freight at all costs, just to stop the financial bleeding.
Right.
So you desperately need a completely independent safety lead who has the ultimate authority to step in, pull the emergency brake, and say, no, we aren't cutting that corner. That driver is out of hours. The truck doesn't move.
It institutes a mandatory system of checks and balances when the corporate environment is under extreme stress.
Yeah.
You have centralized decision making, sure, but clearly segregated operational responsibilities, so safety isn't sacrificed for speed.
Now, the overarching strategy governing all of this is a concept the manual calls operational redundancy.
Right.
And the fundamental law of this strategy is that a logistics network can never, ever rely on a single workforce group to survive.
We usually think of redundancy as a strictly engineering concept, you know?
Yeah, like IT.
Right. Think about a massive server farm powering a tech company or a commercial airplane engine. If one critical component fails, a backup system seamlessly takes over the load without the user ever noticing.
Yeah.
RS Inc. is taking that exact same hard engineering principle, but applying it to human logistics.
Yeah.
You have to engineer alternative driver capacity right into the DNA of the company.
Wow.
That means having legally binding relationships already in place for temporary drivers, independent owner operators, or third-party carrier agreements that can instantly absorb your overflow freight when your primary system goes down.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting to me. The manual talks heavily about cross-training personnel. Like, they aren't just looking outward to staffing agencies for this redundancy. They are mining their own corporate headquarters.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
They are actively cross-training internal office staff to support physical logistics roles. So you could theoretically have a human resources representative or an accounting clerk who usually works a desk job suddenly thrust into coordinating a bustling terminal yard.
Or handling dispatch communications just to keep the arteries flowing. It builds a highly elastic internal workforce.
Yeah, that's incredibly smart.
It is, but internal cross-training has a very hard mathematical limit. You can only stretch your office staff so far.
Right.
Eventually, if the labor disruption is prolonged or widespread, you are forced to bring in external human capital to physically execute the plan.
Which brings us to a massive friction point. Huh? I mean, you have this beautiful command structure on a whiteboard. You have the desk workers helping out. But an HR rep cannot legally or physically drive an 18-wheeler.
No, definitely not.
So because the company is bleeding thousands of dollars an hour, they are forced to immediately inject outside human labor into the system. Let's look at how they parachute temporary workers into these rigs.
This is where the deployment of temporary labor becomes the absolute linchpin of the entire shadow operation.
Okay.
Agencies like RSS Inc., they specialize in providing precisely this kind of highly specialized strike replacement workforce. We are talking about fully licensed CDL drivers, trained warehouse operators, and even specialized strike security personnel.
Wait, isn't it incredibly dangerous to just drop a temporary worker into a massive piece of fleet equipment or a complex logistics network they've never seen before? I mean, that sounds insane.
The danger is very real if it's done haphazardly. That is precisely why the manual stresses that you cannot simply hire random commercial drivers off the street in the middle of a crisis.
Okay, good.
That is a recipe for disaster. The temporary workforce solution relies on the staffing agency taking on an enormous proactive administrative burden long before the strike begins.
How do they actually manage that pipeline, though? Because the manual lists out the paperwork involved, and it is a literal mountain.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah, you have to pull multi-state background checks, audit years of driver work histories, verify complex medical clearances, pull real-time DMV reports, and manage massive workmen's compensation policies. How does an agency expedite that legally?
The secret is they don't expedite it during the crisis. They curate it beforehand.
Oh, I see.
The staffing agency is essentially maintaining a massive, pre-approved, fully compliant, shattered workforce on standby.
Wow.
They do all the vetting, all the background checks, and all the compliance auditing continuously. So when the logistics company hits the panic button, the agency is deploying vetted professionals who already meet every single federal commercial driving requirement.
Okay, I hear that. The paperwork is perfect. But vetting someone on a spreadsheet is entirely different from the actual muscle memory required to operate in a new environment.
That's true.
These temporary drivers, they don't know this specific company's routing protocols. They don't know the quirks of the regional distribution centers. Even with a vetted pipeline, you are operating with a skeleton crew that completely lacks institutional memory.
Right.
How do you mathematically make up for that massive drop in human efficiency?
You bridge that gap with silicon.
Ah, technology.
Exactly. This is where the technological safety net takes over. The source material emphasizes that you cannot rely on manual human-to-human communication during a crisis.
Right.
If you only have 30% of your dispatchers working, they mathematically cannot make the same amount of phone calls to coordinate drivers. The math just fails. So technology steps in to amplify the capabilities of that skeleton crew.
You know, if you've ever tried to rebook a single canceled flight during a holiday rush, just imagine trying to manually reroute 10,000 semi-trucks in a single afternoon with half your staff missing.
Yeah, impossible.
That is what these dispatchers are facing. So they have to be leaning heavily on software automation.
Precisely. They rely on transportation management systems, or TMS platforms, integrated with real-time fleet tracking.
Yeah.
When a massive chunk of the workforce vanishes, the TMS uses algorithmic route optimization to figure out the absolute most efficient way to move the most critical freight using the few drivers they have left.
Wow, so it just recalculates everything instantly.
Yes. The software automatically recalculates load assignments, factors in mandatory driver rest periods, and pushes the new routes directly to the digital dashboards in the trucks.
The manual frames this dynamic beautifully, actually. It notes that automation doesn't replace human decision-making in a crisis. It dramatically improves the efficiency of a reduced staff.
Exactly.
By letting the algorithms handle the rote, mathematical, heavy lifting of rote calculation, the few humans you have left in the command center can focus entirely on high-level crisis navigation and managing the exception.
It creates a powerful synergy between the temporary human labor and the permanent digital infrastructure. But as the source material is quick to point out, even if you execute all of this perfectly, Even if the temporary workers are vetted, the algorithms are humming, and the trucks are physically moving down the highway, you are still walking through a minefield.
Right, because surviving the immediate physical disruption is really only half the battle. We have to look at the hidden landmines that can utterly destroy a company long after the picket lines have cleared.
Yes, the long-term damage.
We are talking about the legal threats and the total collapse of customer loyalty.
The legal landscape of a labor dispute is incredibly complex and dangerous. And it is important to note for our listeners that as we discuss this, we are looking strictly at the mechanical, logistical, and legal realities presented in the RSS Inc. manual.
Right, exactly.
Labor disputes naturally involve opposing viewpoints between management and the workforce. And our goal today is solely to understand how the contingency systems function, remaining completely impartial to the underlying dynamics of collective bargaining itself.
Yeah, the manual's focus is entirely on regulatory survival. A trucking company has to balance the desperate need for operational continuity with incredibly strict federal labor laws and safety regulations.
It's a tightrope walk.
Totally. You have collective bargaining agreements, or CBAs, which are legally binding contracts that strictly dictate what a company can and cannot do during a dispute. Furthermore, the legality of using replacement workers varies wildly depending on the jurisdiction and the specific nature of the strike.
And the federal safety compliance doesn't pause just because you are in a crisis.
Nope.
The Department of Transportation's hours of service regulations, the strict rules dictating exactly how many hours a commercial driver can be behind the wheel before requiring mandatory rest, apply identically to your temporary workers.
Oh, yeah.
Your corporate insurance policies might have highly specific clauses regarding coverage during a labor disruption. The manual explicitly warns that legal counsel must audit the entire contingency plan.
So you need lawyers on standby too.
Absolutely, because if the operations manager violates federal regulations or breaches a CBA just to keep a few loads of freight moving, the long-term legal and financial fallout will completely dwarf the short-term operational losses.
You might win the battle of moving a few extra boxes on a Tuesday, but you will absolutely lose the war in federal court a year later.
Exactly. And that leads directly to the second hidden landmine, which is customer communication.
Yeah.
The manual highlights a very harsh reality in the logistics industry. Poor communication during a crisis will damage your client relationships far more severely than the actual delayed freight.
Right. Think about it from the perspective of the customer. Like, if you are a massive retailer like Target, you are running your own complex contingency plans.
Right.
If your trucking provider is hiding the fact that they are operating at 30% capacity, you can't adjust your own warehouse staffing or manage your own inventory shortages. The lie hurts the customer way more than the delay.
Transparency is the only viable strategy. The manual outlines protocols for early notification of potential service disruptions.
You just have to tell them.
You have to provide clear, realistic timelines and set up dedicated customer support channels that bypass the normal operational noise. You have to look your biggest clients in the eye and be completely honest about your capacity limitations.
So what does this all mean? The manual argues that when customers clearly understand exactly how their critical freight will continue moving, even if it is at a drastically reduced capacity, they're much more likely to maintain that long-term partnership.
Yes.
The manual actually states, trust becomes a competitive advantage during supply chain disruptions.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it reveals the true nature of these operational guides. A strike contingency plan is not really about logistics.
It's not.
No, it is a comprehensive corporate reputation management strategy. Surviving a labor disruption is as much about protecting the company's integrity, maintaining its client trust, and defending its legal standing as it is about physically moving an 80,000-pound trailer from point A to point B.
Wow. Which brings us to the final reality check of this entire deep dive. You can have the brilliant command structure mapped out.
Right.
You can have the pre-approved pipeline of temporary workers ready to fly in. You can have the multi-million dollar route optimization algorithms and the transparent communication protocols. But if all of that only exists in a three-ring binder sitting on the operations manager's desk,
it's useless.
It is entirely useless when the pressure drops in the hydraulic system.
A contingency plan on paper is nothing more than corporate theory. The RSS guide stresses that the vital difference between companies that survive and companies that fracture is ongoing operational testing.
You have to test it.
You cannot wait for the crisis to see if the lifeboat floats. Organizations have to rigorously rehearse these scenarios.
They literally run live fire drills.
Yeah.
The manual mandates crisis simulation exercises.
Yeah.
They run dispatch continuity drills, where they intentionally take half the dispatchers offline to see if the algorithms can actually handle the load.
That's intense.
Right. They run alternative staffing activation tests to see how fast the agency can actually mobilize those vetted drivers. They will purposefully stress test their communication networks and run freight rerouting simulations to find the breaking points before a real crisis ever hits.
It builds operational muscle memory throughout the entire corporate structure.
Yeah.
When a severe disruption actually occurs, the systemic shock is mitigated. The response time is drastically reduced because the leadership team, the software, and the external partners have already lived through a digital simulation of that exact failure.
And here's the ultimate payoff to all of this exhaustive preparation.
Mm.
If we pull the lens back one final time, the manual notes something incredible. While all of this specific architecture is designed to combat labor disruptions,
right,
the exact same redundancy systems, like the elastic workforce, the algorithmic alternative routing, the robust communication protocols, they make the logistics company incredibly resilient against almost any modern catastrophe.
The mechanisms are identical. Whether the company is facing a massive hurricane wiping out a regional terminal in the southeast, a sophisticated ransomware attack taking down their primary routing network, or just a sudden, unexpected spike in national freight volume.
They already have a tested, highly functional shadow operation ready to deploy.
Exactly. They have successfully transformed a defensive contingency plan into a permanent, proactive operational capability.
They engineer a system that makes them nearly bulletproof against a highly unpredictable world. Which actually leaves me with a lingering thought for you to consider as we wrap up today.
Okay.
The manual clearly outlines how a modern company can build this hyper-efficient, highly automated shadow operation. They rely on vetted temporary pipelines and advanced algorithms to seamlessly replace a massive core workforce during a crisis.
Right.
If a massive logistics company perfects that exact system and it runs efficiently, safely, and legally, at what point does that temporary backup system simply become the permanent blueprint for the future of the entire industry? It is something to keep in the back of your mind the next time you look at a map of the global supply chain and watch all those glowing dots moving in perfect, uninterrupted harmony.
It is a profound question about the inevitable intersection of logistics, technology, and human labor.
Thank you for joining us as we explored the hidden mechanics of strike contingency planning and supply chain resilience. We hope you gained some valuable insights today. Keep questioning how the invisible machinery of the world around you actually works, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.